Now that the game is done, it's our time to check in.
Throws it to Trent. Catch and shot, left wing three. You betcha! That's number six. Gary Trent from Giannis. And the lead is 20.
Bucks talk starts now.
They led it by as many as 35 and win it 118-89.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios, here's Justin Garcia.
Well, this one tonight was exactly what you needed to see from the Bucks. You saw the injury report. We talked about this leading up to this game as well. You knew LeBron James wasn't going to play. I think you wondered if Luka Doncic would, given the Lakers played last night, and they just have one back-to-back after another because of all the games they had to reschedule due to the Southern California wildfires. And, I mean, tonight it wasn't just LeBron and Luka. There was no Austin Reeves, who has very, very quickly become arguably one of the better or best third man in the league. Jared Vanderbilt, Rui Hachimura, up and down the list. It was basically to the point of, if you could name him, if you knew a player on the Lakers, the chances are they were not playing in this game tonight. Those can be difficult, as we heard Doc kind of preface before this game, and he was really, really pressed on it after the game as well. But I think especially for a team that I don't know if you would say just fell victim to that, but lost to a Golden State Warriors team without Steph Curry 2 days ago, that was certainly top of mind. But as Doc also mentioned, look, we are playing with Bobby Portis suspended, and now you're down to single-digit games remaining on that suspension for Bobby Portis, but there's no Bobby Portis for us. There's no Jericho Sims for us, who has certainly been a revelation, and you've started to develop and see what he brings in terms of that versatility to your defense. And, oh, by the way, Damian Lillard is out. From start to finish, for the most part, this is exactly how you needed to see the Bucks play in this game. There were a couple of instances where the Lakers did get the margin down to 8 and 9, but the Bucks just had a response every single time, balloon this thing up to 35 at one point, and ultimately win it tonight by 29, taking down the Lakers in a much-needed, not a must-win, but a much, much-needed win to pull back to 500 now, 1-1 on this five-game road trip. And we said this going into the five-game trip, and I know it's famous last words, but suddenly this five-gamer doesn't look quite as daunting as it did at the time of the schedule release, and certainly even a couple of weeks ago when you look at the injuries that the Lakers are dealing with right now. You caught the Golden State Warriors without Steph Curry. Of course, did not take that advantage or did not use that to your advantage. But the Sacramento Kings have significantly cooled off since a rather torrid start after making a coaching change to go from Mike Brown to Doug Christie. They're now a 500 team. They just lost tonight to the Chicago Bulls. And the Phoenix Suns, the game that's certainly going to bring the most intrigue on this road trip for the obvious reason, Phoenix Suns are guaranteed to be below 500 by the time you play them next week. So to me, these next two are big. Again, I hesitate to use the phrase of must win, but these are big ones because these are certainly opportunities for wins. When you look at how your roster stacks up, going to be curious to see what it means for Damian Lillard. Was this just a one game of rest? Does it potentially loom into the weekend as well? So we'll wait to see on that. But with or without Damian Lillard, the Sacramento Kings are a beatable team for the Bucks. Every team, you know, Doc has mentioned this a couple of times when you listen to his pre and post game. And when we play a certain way, we can beat anyone. When we don't play that way, we can be beaten by anyone. The Phoenix Suns have really leaned into the latter there. They can be beaten by just about every team out there in the league, and they have been for the most part. So those are big opportunities for this Bucks team to say, despite the disappointment with how this road trip started and that loss to the Warriors, the way that game closed, the fourth quarter offense, everything we've talked about, you still have a very good chance to get a winning road trip here. 3-2, as we said from the onset, like that should be the expectation. Can you go 4-1? You're feeling pretty good about that up until the fourth quarter against the Golden State Warriors. Can you go 4-1? We'll see. But 3-2 needs to be the expectation, and tonight steered you back on the path towards that. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on, or this morning, I should say, the Siding Unlimited talk and text line to join us on Bucks Talk. We'll take a look at not only the rest of this West Coast road trip schedule for the Bucks, schedule as a whole, and how it has really started to swing here. Some other shooting numbers that stand out with this group, and a big performance from Kyle Kuzma as well. We haven't really touched on the individual performers tonight, but obviously a huge game from Gary Trent Jr., but I think we're starting to see more consistency from Kyle Kuzma. And Doc Rivers talked about that a little bit after the game as well. So we'll get into all those points coming up after this on Bucks Talk.
He's just more comfortable. You can see it. It's coming. A lot of it was organically tonight. Now that I think we ran one play for him the entire game and he still had 20 points. That's the value of him.
As Doc Rivers talking about Kyle Kuzma, who finished this game with 20 points, second consecutive 20-point game for Kuz, 9 of 16 from the floor. And I saw Mike Trudell, the Lakers sideline reporter, even pointed out, hey, very effective, efficient game from former Laker forward Kyle Kuzma, who also led the Bucks in assists tonight with 5. And that's one of the things, I know Doc talked about it early. Myself and Dave and a few others have mentioned too. That's been the biggest surprise to me, is Kyle Kuzma's defense has been better than I anticipated, but I did not see this in terms of his passing and ball movement. I think we all heard about the type of player that Kyle Kuzma was, not only around the trade deadline and when the Bucks made that deal. I think a lot of people were quick to point out he's not a winning player and things of that nature. But I think we started to hear a lot last year around the trade deadline, because remember, there was a deal that would have sent Kyle Kuzma to the Dallas Mavericks, that he essentially said, I don't want to go there. And that's when the, well, he's not this or he's not that, really started to pop up. And I think that kind of sets in and it drives the narrative around Kyle Kuzma. So much so to the fact that I think a lot of Bucks fans were not sure what to expect from him. I think we really looked at the age and the contract when that trade was made. But his defense has certainly been noticeable, and it has made an impact on this team. As we've said, defense, though, has not been the issue all season long. They have consistently been one of the top 10 defenses in the league. Kyle Kuzma has made you better there. And Kyle Kuzma's defensive versatility has been a big piece for this group as well. I think Kyle Kuzma's rebounding and just knack for being around the ball, especially when this team has their bigs available, has been another noticeable thing that's really helped boost this group. But his connectivity and his passing ability and floor vision has really, I wouldn't even say exceeded my expectations. I don't know that I had any expectations, because I wasn't sure what to expect there. And it's been a noticeable boost from Kyle Kuzma. So I think, look, the big thing to circle is he was 0 for 4 on threes. That's the bad. The good, well, he was shooting 75% on his twos. And we start to see more of those shots in the paint, that floater and the hook shot that he gets there, starting to fall a little bit more. You know, when the shooting percentages were down for Kuzma, those shots weren't falling. The three-pointers, 0 for 4, I think that's the volume that you want from Kuz. Those looks are going to be there. And especially once we get into the playoffs and closer to the playoffs, teams are going to say, well, let him shoot it. Because depending on the lineup you have on the floor, Torian Prince is probably going to see some of those looks as well. Teams just don't want Damian Lillard to shoot the three. Teams will even close out on Brooke Lopez. But Kyle Kuzma is the guy they're going to say, all right, take the shot. We're going to start to sag back and pack the paint against Giannis. But I think you're perfectly fine with the 4 attempts tonight. It was those 13 attempts that he had against the Warriors the other night where it's probably a little too much there from Kyle Kuzma. But, you know, I think one of the other interesting things that we heard from Doc Rivers vis-a-vis Kyle Kuzma in his performance was, you know, Doc had said before the game tonight, I felt like he was starting to kind of find his groove and his rhythm and get much more comfortable in what we're asking him to do in this role. And Doc had mentioned this before the game today. He had mentioned it a couple of games ago as well, in that, you know, we kind of settled into this role where at first Kyle Kuzma arrived. And I remember that Hornets game, talking about this early on of, all right, it was just, he just looked like a guy that was fitting in. Like, he was doing a lot of screen setting and passing the ball, but I want to see him attack here. And after a couple of games where he was more comfortable, you started to see that. Doc's point was, once we really discovered what we had in Jericho Sims and figured out what the minutes were for him, and you looked at a front court that was Brook Lopez, Giannis, Kyle Kuzma, you had Jericho Sims coming off the bench. It's going to be interesting, not to get sidetracked, but once that suspension ends for Bobby Portis, and you assume Jericho Sims, the hope that he's going to be healthy going into the playoffs, like, how do you work all these guys in together? Whose minutes are going to be sacrificed and where? But when we kind of said, you're the three, and this is our front court, Brooke, Giannis, and you, he was just starting to get comfortable in that role, and now Jericho Sims goes down, Bobby Portis gets suspended, and it's become a, well, we're going to need you to play three, four, we might even have to have you play the five for some minutes for us here, and that can start to knock some of that confidence and comfort. So a game like tonight for Kuzma, to shoot 75% on his twos and really find what works offensively, and I don't want to say take smart threes, but again, the volume is what you would circle here, just 4 3-point attempts. Doc was very pleased after the game, and I think it's easy to see why when you see everything that Kuz did, 20 points efficiently, 5 rebounds, and 5 assists as well, that the hope is, okay, starting to get there, starting to continue to take steps forward here in his comfort level. There was one other, before we get to the Gary Trent Jr. performance, one other standout player tonight for the Bucks, and the stat sheet may not necessarily back that up, but he made a big impact, and it is worthy of a larger conversation for this team in one of the ongoing debates of starting five, your rotations as a whole. Is there one guy missing? Do we have to reevaluate that starting five? What do you need? What could potentially be missing? And does this player add what you currently do not have in the starting five? We'll get into that conversation and tell you who this player is coming up after this on Bucks Talk.
Pass across the court, stolen by Ryan Rollins. He'll get a breakaway, go into the bucket and throw it in with two hands. Rollins, another steal. So disruptive defensively.
So that guy that we were talking about before is Ryan Rollins. And I've seen the chatter of this starting five. I've had the conversation elsewhere, too. I don't have a firm stance one way or another of, is this the best five-man grouping the Bucks can throw out there? And especially for the makeup of this team, I do think we can get a little too in the weeds when analyzing and dissecting a starting five. Like, the important part is the minutes played, who plays with who, who's closing these games. But you want to maximize your Taurean Prince minutes when Giannis is on the floor, because those are where a lot of the open looks are going to come from, and the catch and shoot numbers the Taurean Prince has put up and told us from day one at Media Day that he looked at the numbers, the clips, everything of where do guys catch the ball when they're on the floor with Giannis? Where are these looks going to come from? Here's how I'm going to make an impact with this group. And we've seen that from Taurean Prince. But one thing, or one area where the Bucks have kind of left themselves a little bit vulnerable with this starting five, is in the backcourt defensively. Now, you do have Kyle Kuzma, who we've slowly started to see take on a lot of those assignments. that were initially going to a Taurean Prince. And look, it's not to say Taurean Prince is subpar or Taurean Prince can't handle the workload they've put on him. But when you look at some of the matchups, like case in point, a guy like a Tyrese Maxey, and I can't recall what the game was, but five or so games ago, we saw it a couple of games in a row where you would have a two-guard like that, somebody quicker in the backcourt. Taurean Prince gets the initial matchup, and that's not who Taurean Prince is. Taurean Prince is playing two right now for the Bucks. He's a 3/4 that can take on some of those assignments. And we've slowly seen Kyle Kuzma taking those in the second half of games if it doesn't work out too well. So you at least feel good in that, well, Kyle Kuzma has routinely showed us he can take on most of these matchups and can really comfortably defend 2-4, 1-4, sometimes 5. But you do wonder about overall, like, what would it do to optimize the defensive group? And more importantly, take a little bit of that pressure off of Damian Lillard on the offensive end to have a true guard on the floor next to Damian Lillard. We've talked a lot about Gary Trent Jr., and that's another one where I kind of float back and forth and sit on the fence there. I don't know, should you move him out of that role with the second unit? He's really found his comfort spot after a rough stretch, not just for Gary Trent, but for everybody on the team, basically. Those first 10 games of the season, he's come back massively since then. He's really comfortable in this role. Doc has talked about that a number of times throughout the season as well. He's comfortable where he is. I don't really want to mess with that. Kevin Porter Jr. is another name that's come up, and it really started with that Timberwolves game going into the All-Star break. But you've seen a lot that you like in Kevin Porter Jr., and again, we cannot state this enough. The Kyle Kuzma move, you've seen what he's brought defensively. I think you can start to see, you still got to work on it, some of the impact offensively, but you shaved off age from your roster. You shaved off money as well. And got yourself into a spot where not only are you under the second apron right now, depending on what happens in the offseason, the Bucks are in a much better spot, base level. They could potentially be a team that has the full mid-level to use. And with a top-heavy roster, the way it was constructed previous to this, that was not going to be a possibility. You were still going to be in the second apron. You were going to be a tax team. They're still going to be a tax team, in all likelihood. But you didn't have nearly as much flexibility. You got younger, you got cheaper, you made sure your 2032 first-round pick is not frozen, so you got two there now with 2031 and 2032 available. It gave you a lot of flexibility. But look at the other parts that didn't get quite as much attention at the time, and the attention that they got, frankly, wasn't great. Jericho Sims. I don't think a lot of people knew what Jericho Sims was going to bring. There was some optimism. I think a lot of that was just the malaise that seems to exist and fatigue with Brook Lopez, where, look, it's clear most of the audience is on one side of the aisle. I'm on the other one. But I think a lot of the Jericho Sims optimism was it's somebody that isn't Brook Lopez and he's younger, so this gives us something else. I don't think a lot of Bucks fans were familiar with the type of player that Jericho Sims was, or saw a lot of Jericho Sims film other than the games he had played against the Bucks as a member of the New York Knicks. So the optimism was just, it's something new. But as you've seen him play more, there's other reasons for optimism. That's the frustrating part about this injury for Jericho Sims, to take him out when you really start to need him most. And again, when you start to get close to Bobby Portis's suspension coming up here and you can figure out, how do we work all of these guys into the mix? You're going to have to basically do that on the fly in the playoffs now. But the third guy was Kevin Porter Jr., who I will readily admit I was skeptical and I didn't know what to expect. I think when you look at the numbers, and especially the advanced numbers, it would dictate his time in Los Angeles with the Clippers. Kevin Porter Jr. was one of the more inefficient players in the league this season offensively. And there was nothing that really stood out defensively. You looked at that and you said, okay, well, he's a young guy. I remember Kevin Porter Jr. scored 50 points against the Bucks, and you gave up Marjon Beauchamp for him. Kevin Porter Jr. has given you more of a true point guard than Ryan Rollins and a player that can run the offense there. His mid-range shot, which another thing, when you listen to Doc Rivers, he combats that mid-range shooting and how we've seen this shift in the league to get further and further away from mid-rangers. The Bucks take a lot of them now. Said, look, we want layups and dunks and three-pointers, but those shots in the mid-range, those are shots that win games in the playoffs. Like, that's where you need your offense from. And Kevin Porter Jr. has supplied you that. Kevin Porter Jr.'s length and defensive ability has given the Bucks an added dimension as well. We've seen, albeit not a lot, but we've seen minutes and lineups where Kevin Porter Jr. is playing next to Damian Lillard, and that's one of the more interesting parts of the, I don't know, is this the right five-man grouping discussion? But just to close the point before we get into that on Kevin Porter Jr., again, Marjon Beauchamp is what this cost you. Now, he has a player option this summer. I've had the question asked a couple of times, what if he declines his player option and becomes a free agent? And especially whenever Kevin Porter Jr. has a big game, that's the concern and what Bucks fans have fretted over. Well, what if he declines that option? That's not good. If Kevin Porter Jr. declines his player option, which, by the way, is about $3 million, and we just said the Bucks shaved off a decent chunk of money, enough to get under the second apron and potentially clear up even more, depending on what happens with that player option with Bobby Portis, Brook Lopez's free agency, and other options the Bucks have. If Kevin Porter Jr. declines that and opts to become a free agent, that is a good thing for the Bucks, because that means Kevin Porter Jr. probably had a pretty significant role in the playoffs. And Kevin Porter Jr. showed you something, so much so that he feels like, look, I can get more money after what I showed than this $3 million here. I don't know if it's there now. I know he's talked about this, and I don't want to put too much into it, but I know he's talked about, I want to be somewhere where I'm wanted and playing on a winning team. And Doc Rivers talked about, like, we just want to grow this guy, and we want to show him how big of a piece he can be for us, continue to develop him, and just surround him with the right people. And that's what we've seen so far. But the guy that got lost in the shuffle with Kevin Porter Jr.'s arrival, and it was really a curious set of, what, like 2 or 3 weeks for Ryan Rollins, because for a week or two, you could not avoid the what's going to happen with Ryan Rollins contract discourse. And the Bucks again had to clear a roster spot in order to upgrade him. They did that. That was another thing you were able to do at the trade deadline. And you upgrade Ryan Rollins to a standard contract. So just as he was approaching the end of his usage, actually ran through his usage, you upgraded him. So you can not only use him in the regular season, he is playoff eligible. Two-way players are not eligible for the playoffs. You only upgraded him through the rest of this season, though. Now, I don't think it's a flight risk for Ryan Rollins, but that was one of the interesting things to see. Oh, it's just through the end of this season. They do have the restricted free agency option on him this summer. But when Kevin Porter Jr. arrived, there was that cloud kind of hanging over of what's going to happen with Ryan Rollins. I'm sure it impacted him as well when you're thinking about, okay, when am I going to get my contract upgraded and know I'm a part of this team long term? And then Kevin Porter Jr. arrives as all of that is happening, and Kevin Porter Jr. takes the minutes from Ryan Rollins. And in those games where they both played, I think it's pretty fair to say Kevin Porter Jr. outplayed Ryan Rollins. But rather than sulking and, man, what happened with Ryan Rollins, or he hit the wall, Ryan Rollins has done what every veteran will do in that spot and just stayed ready. And the minutes he's been called upon, the moments he's gotten, he's made an impact. 10 points tonight for Ryan Rollins, but it was the defense. And it's almost been clockwork, too. You get Ryan Rollins on the floor, especially in garbage time, he's going to score. Tonight, just 3 of 11 from the floor, but 5 rebounds, 4 assists, another blocked shot, the wingspan that he has, the length there.
The three steals were the big part of it. Because when we mentioned having a true guard playing next to Damian Lillard, and is this what they need to examine? I think Ryan Rollins is the most intriguing name there, more so than Kevin Porter Jr., more so than Gary Trent Jr. Because, again, I think you love the role that Gary Trent Jr. is in. Don't mess with that. He's going to play more minutes than Ryan Rollins or Kevin Porter Jr., and he's very likely going to be a closer in the playoffs for you. But he's found comfort in the role that he has right now, so I would not mess with that. Kevin Porter Jr., pretty similar. I think you love having him come in and spell Damian Lillard and have a true point guard out there to run the offense. It's what makes – and A.J. Green's another one that we didn't really spend a lot of time on. There's some numbers I want to get to on A.J. Green where he maybe hit a bit of a wall and now you're looking for him to get out of a funk here in the second half tonight. 2-4 on threes, 2-5 overall tonight was a decent step forward, but you got to see more of that. But with Ryan Rollins on both ends of the floor, his ability to play off guard and handle the ball to, again, alleviate some of that from Damian Lillard. You think back to those Pacers games, and Indiana's not the only one. Oklahoma City has a defense better than anyone in the league. They can do a lot of things other teams cannot do, but you saw the Thunder doing similar things of let's just pick these guys up and ball pressure them the length of the floor, especially Dame. Get the ball out of his hands as soon as he crosses midcourt. We're not going to let Dame control the offense and get off those shots. We're going to sag into the paint so Giannis has to take long twos. You get another guard out there. You get a Ryan Rollins type. He can bring the ball up the floor and let Damian Lillard play off ball. And again, it's not that Damian Lillard can't beat a press, but you don't want to put that much work into getting the ball across midcourt for a guy that you're going to ask to carry a lot of the offense. So in those spots, let him play off the ball. We've seen him excel at that. Defensively, too, Ryan Rollins can certainly pick up a lot of guys in the backcourt. The wingspan, I mentioned earlier in the year, it's not a great comp, but there are portions of his game with his wingspan and shot blocking ability. What, I think it's 6'10 wingspan, 6'11 wingspan that he has. There are parts of that that remind you of Derek White and what he's able to do with the Boston Celtics, the best shot blocking guard in the league, who I believe has 7-foot wingspan. He can take on guys that are bigger than him because of that. But just as we said, the pressure it creates, the problems it creates for your offense when teams are ball pressing you. We've seen Ryan Rollins do that to the opposition. And you certainly saw it tonight, that ball pressure. You cannot understate the importance of that. Again, look no further than the Bucks offense a year ago or the Bucks offense in crunch time against the Pacers and the Thunder and a couple other games this week. But it just changes things. It exerts energy. It makes the guy want to get rid of the ball, get the ball out of his hands, specifically a score. And the importance of making teams start their offense at the 18, 17, 16 seconds on the shot clock, that boosts your half-court defense significantly. And the more we see, especially as you start to see Ryan Rollins find his footing once again after a couple of choppy patches that he had, the more you see, the more I just can't help but wonder if this is the guy, if you're exploring a starting lineup change, is this the guy that we should really be focused on more than any of the other names that we've mentioned so far? 855-616-1620, the Siding Unlimited talk and text line to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. Another one of those names that has certainly gotten some mention is A.J. Green. There are some interesting numbers that stand out in the post-All-Star break version of A.J. Green. We'll take a look at that coming up after this.
Save big money at Menards.
This is Bucks Talk.
Kuzma, 25 feet away, throws to the right corner to Green. A.J.'s catching shot. Three, that's good. They've hit six of their last seven threes. A.J. Green gets into the act. It's 43-20.
2-4 on threes tonight. 2-5 from the floor for A.J. Green. And it's not the point production per se. To me, it's the volume of three-point attempts for A.J. Green that's going to stand out here. And
this may contradict that, but I think you just need him to see. You need to see him take more than four or five per game. Like the other night, it was two against the Warriors. That certainly needs to increase. But I would love to see AJ Green getting 6 to 7 looks a night. The contradictory part is, you know, we talked about this after the Warriors game and a couple other games in this past week or so. Man, it seems like AJ's in a bit of a funk shooting the basketball, and not just AJ Green, like this team as a whole. When you look up and down the roster and think, feels like he's making threes at a lesser clip than he was before. When you look at the numbers, it's gone down for the Bucks pre-All-Star break versus post-All-Star break, but it's not like a sizable drop. You know, it's not like they went from shooting 45% as a team to all of a sudden, holy cow, the Bucks are shooting 33%. It was, I believe, 36, 37% before the break to 35% after the break as a team. AJ Green's numbers were similar. I think it was 42%, 41% that we were shooting before All-Star break, 38% after. So you'll take a high 30s three-point rate from anybody. But with AJ Green, you know, I remember looking through this and thinking, man, my eyes are telling me this. And when I look at the numbers, it's just not the case. I guess I'm wrong. But then you dig through some of the game logs and you see, wait a minute. He went 6 of 9 in that game where they blew out the Dallas Mavericks. That's what's raised the second half to go from 42 to 39 are his splits. We had a 6 of 9 performance in there against the Mavs. If we take that out, it's 33% in the second half of the season. So down about 10 percentage points. I don't know what it is. The looks have certainly been there. He's still getting open looks. The open numbers when there's a defender 4 feet or further away from him, relatively similar. Those are ones where he's down about a percentage point. I think you've started to see fouls pick up, not to the levels of the conversations we were having about Andre Jackson Jr. a year ago, but you've seen the foul rate increase a little bit for AJ Green. I don't know that I'd say teams are targeting him because of the minutes he spends on the floor, but it does seem as though a lot of his fouls have been picked up in transition where teams are just finding him and attacking him in the paint. A lot of them look like, I feel like he moved his feet enough and established a legal guarding position, but nonetheless, he's not getting the call. And one of them, I believe, was the Pacers game in Indy, was one that stood out where he had two of those calls in transition. And you can't help but wonder if it's becoming a mental thing of he's not quite as aggressive, that this all just kind of bleeds into one another, but I think the volume we saw tonight, that's the baseline. You want to see, and you have to see, I think, 4, 5, 6 three-point attempts per game from AJ Green. When he doesn't get them, when the volume is low, the three-point volume for the team is typically low. Like, AJ Green is usually the barometer for how are they moving the ball as a team. Because if AJ Green's getting a lot of three-point looks, that means there's a lot of ball movement and there's a lot of open looks. And it's not just AJ that's getting that high volume of looks. Like, the Bucks as a team are probably taking close to 40 threes. And when they do that, they typically make them. So just increasing the volume for AJ Green, whether that's him being more cognizant of, I got to be aggressive more and I got to take this look, or it's just finding ways to get more of those open looks. To me, that's the important part for AJ Green in the second half of the season, because he is a very important piece to the second unit. And we've seen, not only on tonight's show, in the past, one of the points that's come up by a lot of Bucks fans is the depth that this team has. And, you know, I remember a couple weeks ago talking about this. When you look back at what that bench was a year ago to what it is now, even without Bobby Portis and Jericho Sims, last year, your bench, I mean, there were games where you're still starting Jay Crowder, and Malik Beasley in the starting lineup, right? So your bench was 30 minutes of Pat Connaughton, 25 to 30 minutes from Bobby Portis, Pat Beverly coming off the bench for you.
that was it, basically. Towards the end, Malik Beasley was exiled to the bench, and he was one of those guys. But it was a lot of Pat Connaughton. You did not have very many options last year. You know, it's like the insert name of football player of the, hey, you need 5 yards, I'm going to give you four. You need 3 yards, I'm going to give you four. That was the Bucks bench last year. They could only do so much because this was the group that they had. It's different now, where again, we're talking about Andre Jackson Jr. You know, kind of started to happen last year as well when you saw the minutes start to tail off. But Andre Jackson Jr. is out of the rotation. Ryan Rollins, you know, that type of player, if you, and I know he was on the roster last year as a two-way, but if you had that type of player last year, that's exactly what you were looking for. That's what forced you to go out and make that trade to bring in Pat Beverly. Ryan Rollins has been in and out of the rotation and has not been playing much for the Bucks of late. You have so many more options this season and a much, much deeper bench, and that has allowed you that versatility where you can throw different looks out there. It's tough to gauge the playoffs because Giannis didn't play in that series against the Pacers. Dame missed, what, two games out of the six there. But, you know, again, look at that playoff series against the Pacers. Game one, which you won. Dame and Pat Beverly is your starting backcourt. Chris Middleton, Brooke Lopez, and Bobby Portis is your frontcourt. It's not a dynamic unit in terms of athleticism and quickness that you're throwing out there, so you are going to play at a very deliberate pace. And the Bucks still do that, to be clear. But, you know, when you look at the bench, it's not like, okay, here's where we bring in our change of pace guys. Malik Beasley played 30 minutes. Pat Connaughton played 22 minutes. Jay Crowder played 12 minutes. AJ Green only played 5 minutes. The guys that didn't play, I mean, we didn't even mention Danilo Gallinari was a part of that second unit. It is markedly different from where it was a season ago when you say Kevin Porter Jr. gives us a change of pace guy, a guy that can run the offense, a guy that can hit tough shots. AJ Green is still in that role and has started, I think, to find some of that comfort once again. Gary Trent Jr., they're different players. Gary Trent Jr. in this role is a better variation of what Malik Beasley was. Malik Beasley is certainly a better shooter than Gary Trent Jr., and he's having a fantastic season this year. But for the role the Bucks need there of a guy that can not only hit shots, create offense, Gary Trent Jr. does that more than Malik Beasley. Malik Beasley is basically a catch-and-shoot guy, far and away number one in the league in volume of catch-and-shoot threes. He's moved past what he did with the Bucks last year. Gary Trent Jr. fits that role much, much better. And then again, when you're healthy, Bobby Portis and Jericho Sims to give you more size and pick your matchups. Think back to the run to the championship in 2021. Bobby Portis didn't play at the tail end of that Nets series. He did against the Hawks. He did in the finals against the Phoenix Suns. But you have that matchup versatility. You don't have it right now because of Bobby's suspension and the injury to Jericho Sims. But when you're at full strength, you know, you look at Gary Trent Jr., Kevin Porter Jr., and AJ Green. Ryan Rollins, throw him into the mix because Dame didn't play tonight. Then throw those two forwards out there. Guys that play differently, it's not just a slower, older, plodding team, and a lot more depth that I think you trust. That was the big thing from last year, is the further it went, and this is the danger of getting too hyped up over buyout guys, when all the, oh, if you're a second apron team, it means you can't sign, first apron team for that matter, can't sign a buyout guy that's making more than the mid-level exception. I mean, there's one guy in the last decade for the Bucks specifically that you signed on the buyout market that worked, and that was Marvin Williams. These guys are bought out for a reason. Like, it's usually the tail end. It's pretty close to over. And it's not just the Bucks, to be clear. It's most teams. Like, it's the biggest misnomer. It's the biggest false piece of confidence out there of get this guy in the buyout market. It's traditionally not somebody that's going to make a huge impact on you. That was Danilo Gallinari last year. We saw moments of Danilo Gallinari in that zone defense against the Pacers. You saw it was the end of the line for Danilo Gallinari, who's not in the league this season. Jay Crowder was not in the league until January when he signed with the Sacramento Kings. He was starting for you at times last year, and he was one of your guys off the bench in the playoffs. Pat Beverley is not in the league. Like, that's the makeup. That was the makeup. Thanasis suffered an injury. He's not in the league now. Like, your bench last year, those were the guys that played, Malik Beasley, Pat Connaughton, Jay Crowder, and A.J. Green in the playoffs. Thanasis, Marjon Beauchamp, Danilo Gallinari, Andre Jackson Jr., and Chris Livingston were the guys on the bench that did not play. So, like, even the options that were out there of, well, we could maybe try this, it was just more of the same. And I don't know that that means the Bucks are a better team, but at least gives you different options instead of just, well, this isn't working, let's go to the bench and do more of the same. We'll take a look at that matchup against the Sacramento Kings. And again, see if the Bucks can start to piece something together here with a Kings team that is certainly beatable. They lost tonight to the Bulls, and then that propels you into what's going to be a very interesting game. Emotional, I think we can probably use that word. It's going to be much more emotional, at least for Bucks fans to be able to observe in person a week later when the Suns come here, but it's still going to be the first time you face Mike Budenholzer since you fired him as your head coach. So we'll take a look at those matchups and get you set for that matchup with the Sacramento Kings as we wrap things up after this on Bucks Talk.
Owned and operated.
Welcome back to Bucks Talk.
All right, so up next for the Bucks, the Sacramento Kings on Saturday night. Kings lost tonight to the Bulls at home, 128-116. The Kevin Huerter revenge game, scoring 25. I mentioned Jay Crowder as a member of the Sacramento Kings and talking about that Bucks bench last year versus what it is now, and the names like Pat Beverley that are out of the league. Danilo Gallinari, Jay Crowder was out of the league until joining the Sacramento Kings. Well, Jay Crowder has not appeared in a game for the Sacramento Kings since the Kings came to Milwaukee and played the Bucks on January 14th. Just 7 games total this season that Jay Crowder has been with the Kings or has seen floor time since joining the Kings in, I think I said January. It was late November, early December. So, again, this was the makeup of your second unit a year ago. It's not to say these guys, like, wow, this is the best Bucks, best bench in the league, but it is certainly much improved from where it was a season ago. How much of a difference is that going to make in the playoffs remains to be seen, but I think it goes without saying you feel much, much better about where that second unit is as we speak. I'll get to questions in just a second here, but let's also point this out. You are a full game back of the Indiana Pacers, who keep pulling a rabbit out of the hat with some of these wins. And you're only a half game in front of the Detroit Pistons, speaking of pulling a rabbit out of a hat, with that Cade Cunningham bank shot to beat the Miami Heat last night, or Wednesday night, as it's now Friday morning here. But the Pistons have the fourth most difficult schedule left in all of the NBA. So the numbers suggest Pistons are going to be the sixth seed. All you got to do is catch Indiana. The Pacers have a more difficult schedule than you do. The Bucks now have the 10th easiest schedule left the rest of the way. We've gone from far and away most difficult Eastern Conference schedule. I think it was the fourth most difficult at its peak in the post-All-Star break schedule here, to now it's the 10th easiest that's out there. Easier than the Pacers, easier than the Pistons, easier than the Cleveland Cavaliers, who have somehow lost 3 consecutive games for the second time this season. Half of their losses have come over 2 losing streaks. That's what makes Saturday and Monday against the sub-500 Phoenix Suns team important. Take care of these games that are the winnable games and just continue to put pressure on the Indiana Pacers because of the difference in schedule. What questions do we have tonight as we wrap things up.
Yes, shout out to Apostolos. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Staying up late with us tonight in the YouTube comments. A string of comments here, so I'll pull a couple of key questions. The first is regarding Andre Jackson Jr. We touched a lot on the bench and the rotation pieces. I think I've seen more chatter online regarding Ajax, with some, which is funny because earlier in the season I thought there was a lot on the other side of people wanting him, or wanting less playing time. Now there's some people wanting more.
You saw people wanting less playing time of Ajax earlier in the season?
Chatter about him not being a very high quality offensive piece, I think, is more what I saw. I saw some people talking about, why is he on the floor, or why do we have someone on the floor that's not going to contribute offensively?
I guess we look in different spots. I got to see where you were checking.
All right. Well, anyway, there's a portion of the fan base now on the other side, I would say, that want to start seeing him play more. Do you think there's an opportunity for him with not a ton of time before the playoffs to get some more playing time?
Long story short, no. But I think his role for the, what do we got left, 13 games, is it? His role for these final 13 games and in the playoffs is he is an active body and he is depth there. But for the playoffs and for those big games, for, you know, the two games you have left against the Pistons, like, for different reasons, we talked about earlier in the season, Pat Connaughton being this break in case of emergency guy that was productive, but you just see, hey, I think he plays well, but the athleticism isn't what it once was. Ajax to me is on the opposite end. He's the break in case of emergency, like we talked about. If this is your starting five, and if you're going up against a team that's very perimeter heavy, where you need more than just, hey, Kuz, take this guy, he's an option there. But I think the biggest thing for Ajax is, like, number one, this is going to be a huge summer for him to just continue to develop the offense and figure out, offensively, who am I? What is my offensive skill set? What can I develop? What can I enhance? And how do I fit on the floor? Whether that's just devoting to, I got to be a corner three catch and shoot guy. I got to attack the rim and be a guy that hangs out in the dunker spot and just puts pressure on the rim. Whatever it is, he's, and it's not just him, the coaching staff too, find the role and really dig into that and work on that side of the offense. But in the playoffs, I think his role, and I think this is a valuable one, is 2021 and 2022. We saw it in those two playoffs. Thanasis. And, like, you're going to hear it and laugh. Like, okay, so you're diminishing him. But, no, I think specifically, and I remember it standing out in, I think we saw it in one or two of the games against the Celtics in 22, but I remember specifically in that series against the Nets, when the Bucks tied it at two games apiece in their two games in Milwaukee. And then for the rest of the series, too, the role that Thanasis played was when you got to, like, the final 30 seconds of the quarter. All right, let's throw him out there for defense, a little less than 30, where you knew we're not going to get an offensive look at this. We just got to play defense. I think that's the role for Ajax in the playoffs. And we already saw it once a couple of games ago where Doc did the same thing and took Dame off the floor and put Andre out there in the final, I think, like 13 seconds. I believe that was the Pacers game. I think that's the role, and I think it's an important one because we have frankly seen some problematic closes to quarters and halves for the Bucks, and those are things that can snowball in the playoffs. So it may not be what the most staunch of the Ajax supporters want to hear, but I think that's what you're looking at. And again, I think it has a ton of value for this team.
That kind of leads me into the next point here from Apostolos, basically claiming the team is so talented and so deep, is what he's saying, that he wants to see Doc Rivers make more frequent substitutions, 4, 5, 6 rotation subs, because you're going to have fresh legs. in his words, the pace is going nuts and you're not a one-dimensional team. Would you ever like to see Doc make more frequent substitutions, more, I guess, line changes type of moves? With the goal of fresh legs.
So tonight and the last few games are tough to kind of compare anything to because of who's out.
Sure.
And again, like that's what we have to keep in mind is how is this going to change when Bobby Portis is back? And then when he's back, we think shortly thereafter, or maybe best case scenario before, but Jericho Sims is back too and figuring out, okay, Doc's going to play nine guys max. And let's also point this out. Doc Rivers is not the only coach that does that. So who are those guys? So tonight you played eight guys. Ryan Rollins, we've seen basically out of the rotation or on the fringes of it. Ryan Rollins started tonight because there was no Dame. But Ryan Rollins is a guy I think you've seen enough to feel like this guy can play. Dame is out. That brings you up to nine guys. Those two names that we mentioned. Bobby Portis is going to play in the playoffs. I think Jericho Sims, assuming he's healthy, is going to play. But that's the one I'm still, all right, let's see what that means for his minutes. But right there, you're up to 11 guys. I just, as much as we want to, hey, preserve the energy and get guys rest and play the young guys because then you can play faster. Sure, there is some validity to that. Coaches don't do that, especially when you get to the playoffs. So somebody is going to have to come out. And again, when you get those guys back, two or three guys are going to have to come out. Now, the role that we just outlined for Ajax, like I don't count that as well. Now you're technically playing 90 because of that. So maybe it's just more of that type of thing. That I would certainly be open to, but just a wholesale, all right, we got to start to play 10 or 11 guys and get four and five and six rotational subs and keep guys fresh. I don't think it's entirely positive. It can have a negative impact too when Doc has talked repeatedly about getting Kyle Kuzma comfortable and he was really starting to get into that comfort zone. And then things change where, oh, well, two of our bigs are out, so Kuz, you're not just strictly a three. You're going to have to play four, and you might have to play five as well. Well, if you're doing that to the whole team then, and you're saying, okay, Kevin Porter Jr., you're going to play these minutes. Ryan Rollins, you're going to play these minutes. Dame, you're going to play these minutes. It's just a lot of change with not a whole lot of time or practices to work through those things. So I think the biggest thing is just not even the rotational subs, but like the biggest thing is optimizing the units that are on the floor and specifically your offense and figuring out which are the five-man groupings that do not work, which are the ones that need some work, and which are the ones we have to lean into heavily. Like that to me is the most important thing the rest of the way, more so than finding guys rest or like energy subs and getting different rotational subs out there. Now, like, let's just put it into three buckets. These five don't work together. These five might, but they need some work. These five definitely do, and we have to lean into this and really start to spam those groupings and enhance that. I'm going to be curious to see the version of the Sacramento Kings that we see on Saturday nights, a team that, again, they were the talk of the town in January. They make the coaching change. You see the dead cat bounce. You see it every time a coaching change is made where, hey, the team starts winning. Look at the impact the new coach had. And then start to stabilize. They're a 500 team now. Again, it's not a must win. It's a game you'd really, really like to win because 3-2 needs to be the expectation, not the hope, the expectation for this road trip. So just continue to take care of business in those games. You know the final game is going to be incredibly challenging. It's not just because you're playing, we think, Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray, the altitude, all of it in Denver. The Bucks have struggled there.
So these next two games are very important because it can put you on track to that 3-2 expectation or better. And then who knows where we go. The Pacers and Pistons, as we said, their schedule picks up. In the case of the Pacers, it's now for a little bit. They still have some favorable matchups, including another one with the Brooklyn Nets on Saturday. But just control what you can control, and the rest will start to sort itself out. Saturday night, 9 o'clock tip in Sacramento against the Kings. 8:30 is when our pregame coverage begins, and actually 8 o'clock is when the pregame coverage begins with Bucks Shoot Around. And as always, be sure to stick around after the game into the early morning for Bucks Talk. We will talk with you then.